And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Oh, here we go. I like this version.
Big D and Bubba, they have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind, so they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast. Podcast, the podcast.
Come on.
Big D and Bubba's podcast. The podcast, the podcast.
Big D and Bubba's podcast.
Hello, everyone.
You know, that wasn't terrible.
That's not too bad. Kind of got a little...
I love that.
So, Billy Dean's our guest. So, Billy, that is... that's AI. I know. Close your ears.
Right. no.
But we have it set up... Bubba had it set up where it just randomly, every week on the podcast, the lyrics are the same.
The lyrics stay the same. The melody stays the same, but the genre changes.
So we never know what we're going to get. That's why I was like, oh, I kind of like this one. Like last week, I think it was disco or something.
Yeah,
weird.
And then we have like before that would be like some Greco something choir.
That was kind of like a Buck Owens-y.
They're
going to put me in a movie.
Sadly, yeah. I can't replay it because it's on an auto generator.
I mean, I wish I was into Buck Owens. I just never really got into Buck.
There's some.
I don't know if it's before my. It was a little before my time too, but
yeah.
But
yeah.
It was just
my dad listened to a lot of Buck.
There was some video. Hey, Garrett, what was that video that we got people trashed the song because we didn't know a Buck Owens song?
Oh, it was when Vince Gill was here and he was doing like he was playing songs and we had to name that tune and.
He played
Buckaroo.
And we're like,
the Buckaroo. Well, what a name for a band.
I wasn't even born when that song came out.
Yeah, and people were like, oh, that's the problem with radio. You forgot.
Oh.
I'm like, dude, that was 1960.
Right.
People were also like up in arms because he was playing an Epiphone. He was playing our guitar, the Epiphone, and people never see an Epiphone in his hands.
Oh, on Vince?
Oh, they were mad?
Yeah. They weren't mad. They were just confused.
Man, people,
I know, right?
People need to get into gardening more. They wouldn't have the energy to worry about stuff like that.
Touch dirt.
Exactly.
Golly, take your dog for a walk.
Right.
Hi, Billy Dean.
Hey, guys. Thanks for again. We're on the after show.
Yeah, it's like the podcast. We've had him on the show many times, but the podcast is always fun. We can kind of get a little more deeper into conversations and stuff like that. We're digging this. So you got a new EP, which is basically just putting out. Seven songs.
Yep, seven songs.
Some like classic Billy Dean stuff. We Just Disagree. Only the Wind. Billy Kid. That kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and kind of reimagined. I was telling you earlier that's kind of like yacht rock kind of stuff.
Yeah,
kind of. I don't know.
It kind of is. It's reminiscent of that style, which is good because that's the stuff that is hitting right now.
Well, you know, Keith Urban just did a yacht rock album, and back in the '90s, you could separate the '90s artists in two ways. You know, you were the Hat Acts, Hair Acts, right? Well, the Hair Acts were kind of the yacht rock. We were Travis Tritt, he was kind of Southern rock. The girls like Susie Boggess and guys like Hal Ketchum. We were kind of like. Yacht
I'll
rock,
catch him,
right? We were kind of like Colin Ray. We were into that, that's when we did the Eagles tribute and the Common Thread. We were on that side. And then you had, the Texas kind of line dancing 90s guys like Tracy Byrd, Tracy Lawrence, Mark Chestnut. You had those guys.
Brooks and Dunn.
Yeah. And so that was, I felt like I fell in that kind of the yacht rock because I was inspired by all that stuff. James Taylor, the Eagles.
You met James Taylor.
Dude, I met him at he played the Grand Ole Opry, man. I couldn't believe it.
Never met him?
Well, I had met him years ago, briefly, 20, 30 years ago. I knew he'd never remember. We parked our bus in his parking spot one time right behind his stage one time.
How you met him.
And his manager came out. I said, I'm so sorry. He goes, don't worry about it. He's coming in on the jet. I was like, well, there's his career and my career. There's a big difference.
I'll just move my moped.
That's right. He don't need the parking spot, man. Take it, Billy.
Is he great? I've never met him. He's my favorite artist.
He was great. We were backstage, and I came up. He played the Grand Ole Opry.
I listened to it.
So he was not pretentious at all?
No.
Nothing like that? Okay,
no.
Because that's always a big fear. Whenever you meet your heroes, sometimes they...
And also sometimes that Northeastern attitude can kind of rub me wrong sometimes. That weird kind of Vermontiness,
yeah,
where
yeah.
it gets kind of you're just kind of like,
yeah,
what? I love that.
I said, man, I don't think you realize what an impact on 90s country music you've had. And he says, I'm starting to hear that a lot, you know? And,
interesting. That's an interesting take.
What was really cool at EMI Music when I wrote down there, there was a division of it called April Blackwood Music, and James apparently wrote for that company or published some of the songs, and down in the tape room were reel-to-reel tapes of his demos of like Carolina in My Mind and Fire and Rain, and we used to go down and listen to his original demos. Yep, and I told him that, and it was like he was like, "Where was that at?" I was like, "Was that New York?" I said, "No, it was right here in Nashville." It was almost like he was looking for a long lost demo that he didn't know where to find them, and so I told him that, and then he locked eyes and listened. You know, that's how I always judge people. You know. With everybody around, you know, everybody, we're wanting, you know, Vince hooked me up. I said, "Vince, you got to hook a brother up. I got to get a picture with him." He motioned me over there. And of course, everybody's wanting a piece of him. But whoever he's talking to, he locks eyes with you and he listens. Yep, man, yep. I love that. Yep. And he couldn't have been more gracious.
There's nothing better than sitting around a campfire and you hear the.
Everything I know in my right hand, man.
Just yesterday morning.
You know it, buddy.
You're about to sing and I screwed up.
No, I didn't. I didn't know if we had time to do that or not.
It's a podcast. We can do this. We're going to be here for 4 days.
Oh, Ken, check this out. Take to the highway, won't you lend me your name? Your way or my way seem to be one and the same. Hey, mama, don't understand it. Well, she wants to know where I've been. There might be some kind of natural born fool to want to pass that way again. You know I can feel it, child. On a country road. How about that?
Do you ever see him with the drum machine?
Yes!
Bubba, so in concert.
The one-man band show.
He has, so he comes out, it's a drum, he goes, he's so dry.
He's got great sense of humor.
His comedy timing is impeccable.
Perfect.
And he says, everyone says, you know, I got to get with the time. So I finally gave in and I got me a drum machine. And everyone's like, boo. And all of a sudden, on the side, they roll it out. It's enormous. It's the size. It's as high as the ceiling.
Oh, yes,
and,
right.
And it's as big, from there to you, big, wide.
Okay.
It's enormous. It's like almost like one of those containers.
Is it actual drum heads and things?
Yes. And so they start it up, and it starts rotating, and it's like, see a guy in the
like
street.
Like a player piano?
Yeah,
kind of
very
similar. Imagine an oil rig. You know those oil rig things that's pumping out
like
there? That's
derrick.
What it looked like,
yeah,
didn't
it's
it?
It's just
it's that big. Sky,
okay. Yeah, it's enormous. And it's just like...
So it's actual drums.
Yeah.
Dude. Yep.
Okay. And then he just starts playing right along with it. And you're
he's
just like,
damn, this traffic jam. One of those he was doing.
How
with
I
the
hate to be late. Hurts my motor to go so slow.
Time I get home, myself to be cold. Damn, this traffic jam.
Yeah, man, all the stuff. I like all that. Like, and sometimes I let it just roll into other stuff. Like you get into like, I don't know. Like
Y'all rock.
Cat Stevens and all that kind of stuff. God, Christopher Cross.
That was 90s country music right there, man.
Right?
That
this was one.
Way to go, Billy.
No, and the thing is...
That's real, I mean, though.
And it's a song about sailing. A song that very few people could relate to. But
right,
everyone related to it.
Everybody wanted to be sailing.
Yeah.
And it was huge until... I guess they saw the album cover, or no, when they saw that, you know, they when they found out, you know, like he didn't look like freaking.
Oh yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah. He's not a great looking guy,
you know, but he is a multi-talented guy. He just didn't look like a rock star, you know, like
no.
Your typical rock. But my gosh, that's of course that meant the world to me. I'm being from Florida. When I went to college, I listened to Sailing every single night in my dorm, I listened to that side one of that album. And because I was so homesick, you know, I was ready to come home. And Salem brought me home every night.
Did he also do the theme to Arthur?
He did. He did. Once in your life, you find it.
And his voice is so unique.
It is.
You know immediately it's him. And if you were to sit there and go, all right, let's a group of people, you said, all right, let's sing a, you know, Do-Re-Mi, whatever.
Yep.
I would never pick him. But when you get the music and all mixed in.
Yep. Well, that's what it meant. Like, that's what affected. You don't realize it at the time, but when you come, you know, you start writing songs, all of that, those influences come out, you know, like the. I can't tell you how many songs I have with that chord change. Mm-hmm. You do. Well, it's good for me, good for you. Now nothing neither of us can say I do. And I can't sing the rest of it. It's just so high. But, you know, because he's a tenor. That's why I got into country music, because I couldn't sing along to rock songs because it's way out of my range, man.
You're a sevener.
Now I'm a baritone. I'm down there.
When you started doing like the, because you started doing these videos, TikToks and Instagram, all that stuff. And
did you see my workout one?
Oh, God, I don't think I saw that.
I have a bar next to my workout machine. I do. I make a dirty martini and I start doing.
That's the way workouts should be.
Why dude, darn have? Right it is. What that's the only have? Way you can get me down there is I know the bar's down there.
Yeah.
Dude, why don't they have that instead of like Pure Bar?
Right.
Ladies, it's actually Pure Bar.
I love B-A-R, that. I'm going to use that one, steal that.
Yeah, but I'm sure in my head, and I may be wrong, I know you, and I think that you're in Florida, and I don't know if you're by yourself. I don't know what's going on. Maybe you had a couple, maybe feeling nostalgic, reminiscent, and you just like, oh, I'm just going to record. And you start playing this thing, and you don't realize how connected it you are. You can be through that. It's there's something that rides through it. Not to be too woo-woo-y.
What do you mean? I get connected by what?
But just your what you're feeling, and it, you get it. Yeah. Like it comes through.
It comes through your eyes, goes through your heart, and then comes out in your fingers. It really does. That's just kind of way it processes. You know, the thing about the 90s, coming up in the 90s, you're so, you know, I was so competitive. You're always looking forward. You know, you win Song of the Year, that's not good enough. You know, you want an Album of the Year, you want to be Male Vocals of the Year, you know, and you never enjoy where you are. It wasn't until, you know, I turned 60, you know, that I wanted to, finally sitting down home looking back, like, not to pun the album there, but you know, I never have looked back until now. I was always looking forward, you know, hey, gotta keep going, gotta accomplish this, do that. And it's been really great to look back. My son told me something the other day, was really hit home. It was great. He goes, Dad, you don't have anything else to prove. You know, you don't have anything else to prove. And I said, I don't know, man, it's keeping me going. You know, I gotta write. I still don't feel like I've written, you know, the best love song I could write, you know, even though I'll probably be singing it to a nursing home or something.
Both of those things can be true.
Yeah,
you don't have to prove yourself, but you also have to prove yourself.
I do. And that's what keeps me going.
It keeps you going.
It does.
And if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. Speaking of looking back, so it's seven songs, and kind of give us, can you give us a little bit of like the difference? Because these songs are not like the originals.
Yeah. No, because so Somewhere My Broken Heart was written on the piano, Richard Lee, my co-writer, that was a piano song. But you know, we you know, when we did the original, you know, it has that. But the new version, since I don't have a piano here, it's structured more like so here's Somewhere in My Broken Heart. If you can imagine what I'm playing is like a piano, it'd be. Okay. You made up your mind, it was time, it was over, after we had come so far. But I think there's enough pieces of forgiveness somewhere in my broken heart. So it'd be like a piano.
I can hear that.
Yeah, so that's Somewhere in My Broken Heart. Then I really like Only the Wind. Actually, when I finished Only the Wind, I sent it to Chuck Jones, the writer, because I really liked the version, but I really took a lot of liberty. Let's see. Oh, here he is. I remember as a child on a dark and stormy night. I heard the screen door slamming. I was overcome with fright. And so afraid that something bad was trying to get in. And then Mama came to comfort me and said, "My son, it's only the wind. Oh, and nothing more. Not the end of my world. Just walking out that door, and I wish that I could just dream again. Believing it's only the wind." So it's kind of like that. It's kind of vibey, you know. And I sent it to Chuck, the writer, and he said, "Man, I love it, Billy." And I'm not trying to, you know. These rearrangements, you know, you're not rewriting them or getting any writing credit or anything. You don't want, I don't want any of that. I just want the blessing of the writers to say, "Hey, man, you know, after playing these for 35 years, they've kind of taken on a new life of their own, you know, when you're playing them out live. And now that I'm old enough, I've actually grown into some of these lyrics, you know."
Right.
I hadn't lived a lot of these lyrics until now, you know, so it made a big difference, and that changes the way you deliver it. You know, when you're a kid trying to make a radio record, and you got a producer that's keeping, you know, "Hey, this is how it's going to go," and I'm learning, you know. But now that I've been out there for a while, you know, these songs have gotten inside my DNA, and I've lived a lot of this. These lyrics, and so it comes out different.
And now, I'm sure the people who listened early on, who were the same age as you, grew up and were like, loved it then, and now they agree with what you're.
And they
feeling.
Hear the lyrics differently now.
They do.
And it's interesting because, you know, we talked about it on the show, is that the songs, the way that you have them now, really puts the emphasis on the lyrics.
It really does. It really does. That was the idea, is how do we play the lyric? You know, if I was the guitar player, how would I play this lyric? If I didn't know how the melody went, and just reading those lyrics, that's what I did. I took the lyrics, I printed them all out, all seven of the songs, and I sat down with the guitar, and I was just reading the lyrics, divorced myself from the original melody, and as I'm reading the lyrics, it is hard to do. It's hard to do, but as I'm reading the lyrics, even reading the lyrics gives a different rhythm from how the song originally went. When I was reading the lyrics, I was like, "Wow, this is totally, it's kind of a different rhythm when you read it, yeah, and not sing it." And that rhythm, you know, started getting inside of me, and then it started coming out through my fingers, because I'm sitting there holding my guitar, reading these lyrics, kind of playing along to the rhythm of how I'm speaking them, and wanted to make them more conversational, and so that the lyric really stood out. That was the point, you know.
What's your take on where the country music is right now?
You know, I like it. There's some I like, some I don't. But I really like Little Ella. I have to say, man, I did a little writer's round with her, Ella Langley, about 3 years ago. And
before she was Ella.
Yeah, before she was hitting it, man. And she did that. I think she did that Excuse Me song. And as soon as she did that, and I heard her dialect, that Alabama dialect, yeah, I thought, "Oh, my God, this girl's going to be huge, man." And, yeah, I'm so glad to see her doing it now. I like her stuff, man. I like her. This is crazy.
Album is so solid.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't
it's
know if
hooky.
You've heard the whole thing. It's just one to the other. From start to finish, it's just awesome.
I tell you the rule of thumb. This is the same rule. If you have a strong country dialect, this was true back in the 90s, you could get away with more of a pop-sounding production. But if you had more, if you did not have a strong country dialect voice, then you had to have more of a country, you know, dobro, steel guitar, fiddle, more country traditional track.
Interesting.
You know, that so you could
it
get
makes sense.
So that's why Ella and some of these people can get away with, you know, more of a, you know, drum loop or whatever kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. because when you hear her sing, you know that's a country song. That's a country girl right there, you know. Yeah. But you may not know that on some. So I think that's what trips some people up is if they don't get that right, then it doesn't sound country. You know, like if that singer's not very country or if that track's not very country. I personally like a steel guitar and a fiddle because in my mind, the steel guitar is the man and the fiddle is the woman. And most songs are about, you know, about man and woman, right? Uh-huh. So you hear the steel and then the fiddle answers it. In my mind, it's a country. It's Conway and Loretta, man. It's the steel and the fiddle. You know, that's what makes it country for me.
Dude, that's a great take. I never thought of that. Are right, you ready to play some Little River Band?
Next, Lonesome Loser.
We're just reminiscing.
Why not?
Dude, I love all that stuff. I do. I love this. I love all these songs that you've done. I was a little afraid that it wasn't going to
be. I was going to say, you know who loves all the Yacht Rock stuff? My kids.
Oh, are
like,
you serious?
Our kids' age group right now loves all the Yacht Rock stuff. They love... Like they all say, and you'll see it all over online. I wish I was raised in the 80s and 90s. And
wow.
Oh,
it was the best, man. 80s and 90s were the best.
Man, and you know, I think these kids can hear that these songs had melody, real different chord changes, very complex chord changes.
They weren't written by committee.
That's right. They were not.
They were usually written by one or maybe two people.
Yep.
And you can tell because there's emotion and it's not, you know, oh, this lyric was voted on.
Yep. So when we were, you know, when I was coming along to make a living before we got to Nashville, we were playing top 40 songs in a band, which means you had to sit down and learn the songs and learn these chords. We never played these chords before, you know, being in a little, you know, bar band. But if you're going to play those songs, it forces you to go home in Woodshed and you learn those songs, right? Well, the people nowadays that go out and gig, they have a loop pedal, you know, and that means you only play like three chords in that loop pedal and it loops and loops, and they never get to learn like major seventh chord. Man, Dean Dillon's made a living on that chord right there, you know.
What are you doing?
That's a little major seventh chord. I was thinking about, so this would be, well, excuse me, but I think you got my chair. A little minor, a little too. No, that one's not taken, I don't mind. If you sit here, this little passing chord, I'll be glad to share. You can't do that in a loop pedal. If you're gigging, if you're trying to play that song with a loop pedal, you can't do that, you know, with a gig. So they never really learn a lot of chords. Well, when we were coming up and having to learn all these songs, we had to learn all those chords. And now I'm seeing like Ernest and people being a leader. They're following Ernest. Ernest is playing major seventh chords, and he can write anything, man.
And it makes songs, you don't realize why it sounds different, but that's it.
Yeah. So this is happy. This is happy. This is melancholy. Does that make sense? Do you feel that?
Yeah.
You know, and this is maybe, I'm not so sure, confused. You know, those three different things chords that you would hang a lyric over,
it's art.
That's it.
It's the same as a painter and a brush stroke.
And you got more chord you have, the more paint you got to paint.
I was listening to, Paycheck and Old Violin.
Oh my gosh, one of the all-time greats.
And I remember when I heard it the first time, I was put off by it.
I didn't get it
because
I was a kid, so I didn't get it.
I was put off by it because he messes up.
Yeah,
there's a thing where it's like a hiccup in the song. Like they messed up in the recording and they didn't re-redo. They didn't recut it.
Right.
And then I found, and I was kind of like, it's just kind of sloppy. And then I listened, then I found myself craving to hear it again.
Yep.
And then I listened and it got to the part again. And then I wanted that part again.
Yeah.
I wanted it to not be perfect. Exactly. I realized that there was something in me that I like, I guess it's the realness of
a lot of blues. Yeah. A lot of blues is they would record it straight to tape. Even, you know, like all the Tab Benoit stuff and all that. There's no overdubs. There's none of that. It's like, you know, you get whatever happens, and you're going to hear strings pop. You're going to hear flubs. You're going to hear all kinds of weird stuff.
That's what puts me, the listener, in the room with those people when they're playing it. When I hear the damper pedal on the piano, and it's like, don't cut that out.
Yeah. When you hear the stomp.
It puts you there. You know, me, the listener, it puts me in that room. If it's just all dry and you don't hear all of that stuff.
It's too perfect. It's something wrong. It's too sterile.
If you listen to the very last note of the original version of Somewhere My Broken Heart, you know, it goes, somewhere in my broken that was always a hard one for me to sing.
And that note,
and I didn't nail it on the original, and I wanted to redo it. And my producers would not. They thought I was crying. They thought it's kind of like the Michael Jackson. She's out of my life. You remember when Michael Jackson?
Yeah.
That happens on the very last note of Somewhere My Broken Heart with the heart. Somewhere My Broken Heart. I waver.
That's what I'm talking about.
And they wouldn't let me punch it
that's
in.
That's old violin. There's a part in the song he does. There's like the timing is off.
Yeah.
Go back and listen to it. It's about 2 minutes into it. And he gets out of the chorus and he goes back into the verse. And it may be right after the first time he does the chorus. And it's just like, boom, 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 boom. And it's just got little.
Yep. And there's a fine. What I'm having trouble today. You know, going and recording is there's a fine line between you said it, and I use the very word. There's a fine line between sloppy and cool, and I'm not sure where that line is. That's why it's good to have a young producer say, "Hey, man, that's cool," and because for some like somebody like me, I might go, "That's sloppy," you know. But I don't know when sloppy is cool, you know.
Well, because you're playing all these crazy chords and you're learning the details of that.
Also, whenever they're when they're constructing music without an actual person there, I mean, dude, you've sat down with Pro Tools, you've sat down with all these things. I don't know if have you ever messed with all that? Like,
nah,
you can
really.
Literally, you can put a dot on a screen and then go, and you could decide exactly where you want that note to be. And then go, okay, duplicate, and you go, and drop it an octave and do all this stuff. You never have to have a human involved. There never has to be anybody string pluck the guitar.
There was this engineer in Nashville. All he did was tune vocals. That's all he did. That was so much work for him that kept him busy.
Before auto-tune.
Is that
the guy who would like put his finger on the tape and things to make people...
No. This is like today, digitally.
Oh,
he's doing
okay.
It, but he's got a little sign hanging in his studio that says, "Come on in, I'll sing your ass off for you."
It's even up for us on the show. It's spoken word is obviously different than music, but the feeling can be a lot of the same kind of feelings.
Yeah.
And you can really, through storytelling or music in the background or sound effects, you can really paint a picture for someone. And I used to get really caught up in, we didn't really do that break perfectly.
Right.
I misspoke. I'm so dumb.
You're a perfectionist, man. You want it to be right.
And then I got to the point where I realized that it comes off fake. And it comes off as not me and him. It's not just because what you're hearing now, this is no different. People, they'll listen to the podcast and they'll go like, "I don't know." It's like, I like listening to your show because it doesn't sound like all the other shows.
Right.
Because it it doesn't. We're not.
You'll never be confused.
Whatever that is.
You'll never be confused with AI is what it is. Everybody knows. You'll never. That's how you can tell the difference, because AI is going to make it perfect. You know.
I just think that when, like, if you're listening to a radio show and they come, and there's a lot of great people in radio, but when you come out and it's so formulaic and they have a weird voice.
Yeah.
They do that thing, and it's like, coming up at 7:20.
All that
stuff.
The DJ voice.
I immediately just cringe. I'm just like, just be you.
Like, hey now.
And they'll get these consultants, man. We would have these consultants would come in and be like, hey, you know, you need to be this character and he needs that character. And I was like,
we fell into all those traps
and it
early
was
on.
So, and we got lost. We didn't know who we were.
Well, right, because right. we were being told as you were,
exactly.
you're being told how to be you.
Right.
And oftentimes their idea of what you are and your idea of what you are very different.
Yep.
But you're, especially when you're young, you're like, yeah. oh yeah, I have to do what they say. These guys know what they're yeah. talking about.
You just
about.
Want a job, man.
Well, that's it.
You just want to get the next record.
And they'd been there and had success, so you kind of listened to them. When I came to Nashville, man, I was such a big fan of Merle Haggard. I could sing just like Clint. I could almost sound exactly like Merle Haggard. And what happens when you get to Nashville and you've been playing in clubs and everything and you're singing the way the you're trying to imitate kind of the singers or whatever, it becomes a sad day because you realize I have to find my own voice. I have to quit imitating my heroes.
Yep.
And then that was the big hiccup, man. I was like, some guy, I sang him a song. He goes, son, we already got a Merle Haggard.
That transition yeah. is hard.
It is.
It's very, you feel like you're on a road trip with no map.
Yeah.
And it's foggy and rainy.
That's exactly how
and
I
And you're
feel.
Tired and you're confused.
Yep.
We went through the same thing. You know, we grew up listening to certain radio shows, you know, just because you do.
Yep.
And those are our heroes.
Do you remember Jerry Howe?
Of course, yeah.
He never had that DJ. That I would call it like from the Larry Sadler show. You know the Hey Now, Hank Hangsley.
No, Jerry
hey
was just now. Smooth.
He just talks. It
was
like
he was just doing it.
He wasn't trying to.
And he was naturally. He was always. I mean, he's still alive. He's always thinking of. A line, he's yeah. a hook. I
super
mean,
super intelligent dude.
Yeah. Very,
that's what set him apart from anybody else he competed with. Is yeah. he was smarter.
Yeah, and I think that him and us. I think the two shows were so different, and
yeah.
I think
because we worked together
when we came in the building, it was. it wasn't awkward, but I could tell, and I worked really hard to. Kind of bridge a connection with
yeah.
us and
he
him.
He loved when you would walk into his
he
studio.
He hated it.
It did.
they would be on like we're doing syndicated mornings.
Right.
So we're on like I don't know how many stations at the time 12. Oh. Or whatever, I don't know what it was. And he's you know doing Nashville.
Yep.
Just Nashville. But we were doing the mornings and then also coming back and doing afternoons just for Nashville live.
Right.
Doing two shows.
We're
a
doing
day,
two
every
shows
day.
Wow.
For a decade. Yeah.
Wow.
I thought I'm going to kill myself. And so we were doing that, and I would, like, during the show, like, we would have a break. I would just walk down the hall because I could hear it. You know, they're doing it live. I
yep.
could tell when they're in a break or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'll just open those the big, heavy door, that soundproof door.
Yeah. yeah.
It's like a bomb door. Open it up.
Yep.
And it's him and Al and
who you always ragged on Al Vex.
Oh, golly. We ragged on Al.
And Devin O'Day.
Devin, all of them. And
who was the guy who was like that? Jerry.
Well, that's...
Oh, it was one of his characters,
wasn't
it?
Jerry.
Oh,
stop
the guy,
it.
The guy almost...
He always,
I saw at the Walmart and almost ran right over
and
he got
mad.
Scared.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God, what was his... Anyway. But I would walk in and turd in the punch bowl.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh.
Even though we
because
were on the same team...
But they were...
They were their
Jerry
own team.
Jerry was very, he was a gentleman.
Competitive dude, probably.
Oh, yes.
Y'all were nipping at his heels.
Very, yes. This is called the elephant in the room. Yes.
That wasn't our fault,
but
though.
That wasn't
no,
our fault.
No, he knew that.
I don't know, because you know. I don't know if he ever, we never really talked about it, but we were not put in that position because we asked to be in that position. We were put in that position because we were told, you're either in this position or you're out.
That's
I lost
right.
$24,000 because we had to be put in that position.
Yes.
Wow.
I just bought a house, and they're like,
yeah, just bought a house in Baton Rouge. And then,
oh, wow.
Yeah, because it was we're taking off. And like, so the company at the time was like, well, yep. Big D and Bubba are going to be based in Baton Rouge, and we're going to do the syndication out of here. It's going to go to our company stuff. And then
Jerry had the
brain aneurysm.
Yeah.
And, you know,
us artists, we know how much you guys love music. And that's always apparent when I come in here, man. You make your living doing this and you're jocks, but we all get in this business because we're fans of music.
Yeah.
All of us. And you guys, you've got music knowledge, you feel it. that part of your what you guys do, and I think most artists, why we love you guys, is because of that. Because we, you know, we're musicians. You know, we're, you're not here just trying to, yeah, you know, sell a can of beans or something. You know, you guys here because of music. I know
it's
you got to sell a can of beans.
Right there.
Oh, it's corn. I was like, I could catch some trout right down the river with that corn right now.
It is. You're right. It's a weird business, and you know, and we see a lot of we see all of it.
Yeah, you do.
Like Clint Black was in here the other day.
Yeah.
You know, you're in here today.
Yeah.
And then we get somebody, but I could tell you, you wouldn't have any clue who they are.
Yep.
I don't know who they are. They're so new.
Could be
they're
like just... this new girl named Ella who came in.
Ella, yeah, Ella came in.
We're sitting in here one day, and Garrett goes, "Hey, guess what I found?" I'm like, "What?" He goes, "I found an interview and performance from Ella Langley before she was famous. It was like the week she signed her record deal."
Wow.
And she came in, and I mean, you could tell there was something there to it.
Totally.
But yeah, and just having an understanding of, and also just being doing this for as long as we have, we have a better understanding because we've seen it. We're like, okay, this is a cyclical, you know, this is going to come back. We're going to have that, we're gonna, you know. But I think what you're doing with this Looking Back project is smart. And I also think it's good for you. I think it's good for you.
It puts new life back into you and these songs.
It does, man. And it puts me back to work. You know, I thought I had this happen about two years ago or whatever. It had been 8 weeks since I picked up a guitar. I didn't realize it. And I asked Vince Gill, I was talking to him about it. I said, man, what's the longest you've ever gone without picking up a guitar? He goes, every day. And I had gone 8 weeks, and I thought, and I didn't even realize it. I didn't even miss it, you know? Right. And my calluses were getting soft and everything, and I had a show coming up, and so I picked up the guitar to kind of start getting ready for this show, and I was missing stuff. I wasn't hitting stuff. I was like, wait a minute, I got to do that again. I've never had to practice, right? Because you play so much. You're out. You don't ever have to practice.
That's scary.
It's muscle memory.
It scared me straight, man. It scared me to where I picked that thing up every day now because of that, because it really did. It scared me because I think that's, no matter what, I don't care if I'm out there where people can see me or not, I don't want that skill. I don't want that skill set to go away because I lay it down. When age comes in and takes it away, you know, that's okay. That's that. But I don't want to be the one to cause that. And so that scared me to the point where I got back to work. I get my truck and I go do vocal exercises for about 2 hours. I'll drive, do an hour, you know, exercise an hour back because, you know, you have to as you get older, and I want to sound good, man. I want to sing good, and I want to play good.
And you do.
And that's what means more to me than anything else. You know, is as long as I keep that level, you know, as long as I can. That's what I'm about. So Looking Back was really kind of got me back in practicing because I had to go in and record these things, you know, and I wanted to go in and just record them, start with just me and the guitar like I did, and I wasn't nailing it. I wouldn't play. I couldn't get. I'd do 15, 20 takes just to get the guitar and vocal to.
For a song you've done 1,000 times.
1,000 times, man. And I was like, this isn't good enough. But it made me do it over and over, which again, my calluses started coming back, you know, my muscle memory started coming back. Mm-hmm. I was like, thank God, man. I'm not going to ever stop again, you know.
And plus, it's new. It's old songs that you're doing, but it's new songs
because they really are.
They're different. They're not the same.
They really are not the same. And I think I think lyrically, like you were saying, Bubba, I think it puts the spotlight on these lyrics, which mean to me. I think that they mean more. Like Only Here for a Little While. I think we need to hear that song again, man. I think the message, you know, I'm going to hold who needs holding, mend what needs mending, walk what needs walking. It means I'm going to pray what needs praying. We're only here for a little while. I think our country needs that message again.
And the way that the new version is, it's not as happy and bouncy. It's more of a pensive kind of, hey, this is emotional. This is real. We're only here for a little while.
Yep.
Fix your stuff.
It sounds like he should take us out with that.
I'm gonna hold who needs holding, mend what needs mending, and walk what needs walking, though it means an extra mile. And
pray what needs praying and say what needs saying. Yeah, I'm gonna go that extra mile. We're only here for a little while.
Billy Dean, it's called Looking Back. Make sure you check it out. So Billy's really good at just stopping, talking, and playing. It's not. It sounds like a bad edit, but it's not. He just goes, and so I just heard who needs holding. That's a true professional. Been doing it a long time. Make sure you get it's called Looking Back from Billy Dean. As we take us out, you're going to like this.
Oh, is this a new version?
So the out.
But now it's over, but that's okay because you can listen to the regular show on the radio every day.
It was the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Steel guitar guy.
The Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Snap and tap, baby,
the Big
snap
and tap. D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Dip your wages.
The Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Thank you, Billy.
Thank you, boys. Good to see you again.